The next case is 98-1338, Dr. Frederick E. Harris et al. Versus Elaine Liston.
I'm just going to display my great adherence to the legislative process and final constitutional
Justice Cook has removed himself. In this case, we're pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Cook, Judge James Walsh, is a judge of the Court of Appeals, and then the 12th. Mr. Norman.
Thank you. May I please support? My name is Forrest Norman, the appellant, James Road Corporation. This time I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for the case. First impression in the state of Ohio, and from what I can tell, first impression in the United States. The statute of limitations issued on a latent property damage case where, admittedly, the prior owner of the property had a cause of action and the statute of limitations expired for that cause of action for the prior owner. What makes this case unique is that none of the latent property damage cases to be decided upon by the appellate courts or the Supreme Court have ever dealt with a scenario where the statute of limitations expired, the property was transferred, and the new owner attempted to bring suits against the builder vendor for the alleged latent defect. So the issue is, does the mere transfer of property somehow revive the cause of action? I submit to you that the law holds, and the logic behind the law holds that it does not. Parties are in agreement that ORC 2305-9D applies, giving a plaintiff 4 years from the accrual of the cause of action to bring suit. In a latent property damage case, the cause of action accrues when the property damage ensues or manifests itself as the injury in fact rule. The injury in fact here appeared more than 4 years before suit was brought. Prior owners clearly knew that their property was sustaining some type of latent damage. The manifestation of water ponding in their backyard was observed as early as 1985. They owned the property until 1991, upon their transfers. In 1993, the Harrises brought suit. The statute of limitations was expired for the prior owners, the Listons. It cannot revive simply by transfer. For example, an owner of property cannot transfer a right which that owner does not possess. Here, when the cause of action, the rights to bring suit, had expired for the prior owner, they then sold the property without that right. That right was gone, and it cannot be revived simply by the contract between the seller and the buyer.
I take it they sold it without giving notice to the buyer, the new buyer, or the buyer of the defect.
That's correct.
There was a settlement here, apparently, and so Liston was settled out.
Listons have settled out. There were numerous allegations that actually went to trial against the Listons, and subsequently, after a jury verdict in favor of the Harrises against the Listons for breach of contract, on disclosure and fraud, the party settled at the Court of Appeals. The problem with permitting the springing cause of action which somehow revives after the transfer of property, is that it leads to absurd results. First off, it never permits a party to, it never permits the builder vendor to be free from potential liability.
Conversely, to adopt your position, it also permits the builder vendor to go free for activity that he or she has caused. Or it has caused.
Any party who had cause of action against them defeated on the basis of the statute of limitations is allowed to go free. A claimant has a reasonable amount of time to bring a claim. And we've got a situation here where a reasonable amount of time after the cause of action accrued had expired. there was plenty of time for the Listens to bring suit against anyone that they felt could have caused or been responsible for this condition.
What if the Listens were good friends of the builder? I mean, they can let the statute of limitations expire, and then the successor owner is stuck.
That's correct. And the successor owner, if they feel that they have been harmed by a non-disclosure of a condition, have to cause an action against itself. If they feel that there has been some concealment of a condition, they're allowed to do so. But certainly, a party that possesses a cause of action has the option of bringing that or not, for whatever reason, be they friends of the builders, which I don't think is the case here, or for whatever reason, maybe the moral diversion to bringing suits, which doesn't seem to be too much of a problem.
Haven't we adopted the discovery rule in property damage actions?
The court has been moving towards that direction in the NCR case, right. Asbestos contamination case. This court did apply the discovery rule to that. Under the discovery rule analysis, we get the same result because the discovery rule requires that a plaintiff bring suit when they knew or should have known about the cause of action. The discovery was done by the prior owners. The discovery in a property damage case is not it would not become a new discovery period.
When did the Harrises discover it?
1992, when they bought the house. The Listens knew whom the Harrises bought the property from.
I mean, the Listens, I mean, when did they discover it?
From the day they moved in 1985. It's reflected in the record supplement pages 29-34. Elaine Liston stated that.
The first winter after they had...
The first day that they moved in. When the Listens moved in, they discovered the condition
right.
of moving in. In fact, they attempted to remedy it by adding additional drainage in the back. Now, rear yard drainage was a requirement in the purchase and sale agreement, which the original seller placed upon the buyer. And it's sort of an ancillary issue here.
So they had an action against Jackson Road.
The Listens, they could have. They
could
not
have.
Great. They never brought anything in this.
Theoretically, they
had that cause of action. The cause of action accrued when the damage manifested itself. There's no evidence that there had been any damage before 1985, and unfortunately, the parties were finding that out because the original owner, Mr. Fisher, has since passed on, so we simply don't know if that condition existed. But one of the problems with permitting the spring and cause of action is that it defeats any statute of limitations for the builder. It allows someone to revive the cause of action merely by transfer of property. In theory, you can transfer a property to a corporation, then transfer it back, and you revive the cause of action. If discovery is applied, if discovery is allowed to accrue anew when the property is transferred. By way of example, when we're looking at property, it's different than a personal injury scenario because the damage is actually done to the property as opposed to the individual. No one would maintain that if your car was damaged, a tree fell on your car, your neighbor's entrance, and you allowed 4 years to pass before bringing suit, the cause of action for damage to that car would be barred by the owner. If the owner of the car then went and sold that car, the new buyer of the car would not have a cause of action against the negligence which damaged the car. So it yields absurd results if we allow a cause of action to arise anew for property damage when the property is simply rented. The case of Point East condominiums is intriguing because the same three judges of the District Court of Appeals ruled on that case and ruled on this case here. There's a critical factual distinction between those two cases. In Point East, the sprinkler damage, which originally was complained of, was separate sprinkler damage. from what was eventually sued about. So in construing statute of limitations by the 8th District Court of Appeals in Point East, found that it was in fact new damage which had occurred in 4 years and had manifested for 4 years at the time this brought. In fact, in Point East, the sprinklers are believing that the plaintiffs eventually sued upon and not even have installed when the first damage appeared. The courts have clearly rejected the idea that there's an expert determination needed to the ultimate cause of the problems. No court has held that you need an expert to tell you what the ultimate source was. It's simply manifestation of the damages itself.
Counselor, help me with something I've been wrestling with in this case, and I think that, and I'm not even sure it's pertinent, but it might be. We've had the argument around here from time to time about the statute of repose for architects and engineers and builders. That has been held to be unconstitutional on the basis that the cause of action is extinguished before it ever accrues. 15 years was the time period. Supposing, and we had one, the church was built, the one congregation transferred it to a new congregation because the old congregation needed a bigger place, and the roof fell in on the new congregation 17 years later. Your position, no cause of action, even though they could show defect in construction.
Well, this case is different from the statute of repose because we have an accrual within the original period. And as you correctly observed,
well,
but
the structure was weak when it was built, so it accrued then, and the congregation knew that the roof was bad, maybe, but it never fell in.
Depending on how this court continues to construe the statute of repose, it might well bar the suit.
All right, forgetting the statute of repose, supposing it was a 4-year statute of limitations, as we have here. What I'm going to is the successor in interest. It seems to me you say a successor in interest never has a cause of action if the original statute of limitations has run on the prior owner.
Yes. I am saying that a subsequent owner would not have the cause of action if the damage had accrued, if the cause of action had accrued. So under the scenario that you were describing, we would have a situation where the roof would fall out on the congregation before the transfer. And then that permit is to expire before they bring the cause of action.
But your general propositional law, as I understand it, that you want us to write in this case for all other cases, is that a successor owner in interest can never bring a cause of action when the statute of limitations has expired against the prior owner.
Correct.
Well, you used the word if the action has accrued. If
yes.
The action has been discovered, of course, by the prior owner.
Well, then the damage would not have happened. Since we're dealing with latent property, the accrual is when the damage itself is manifested, when it does become apparent to the owner of the property.
Yeah, but the accrual in that case would be accrued for the prior owner who would have knowledge, but the successor owner would not.
If the prior owner had knowledge of the defense,
yes,
and did not sue upon it,
yes,
then it would be...
That's here.
Then it would be barred. Absolutely.
Even though it doesn't accrue to the new owner until they discover.
But it had accrued on the property.
Yeah, I understand.
The inquiry is the damage to the property. It's when the race, the subject of the transaction is damaged. So it's actually when the land itself manifests some type of harm when it is damaged. That is what starts the clock running. The subsequent discovery, because we can have multiple discoveries of the same condition. If every time the property transfers, the new owner is permitted to discover anew, then we have completely devoided the rationale that the cause of action is related to the damage itself.
In effect, we wouldn't have a statute of limitations.
Eviscerated.
Exactly. We completely avoided the statute of limitations. briefly, I'd like to touch upon the nuisance arguments as well. There's been also a claim on nuisance. And we maintain that you cannot have nuisance occur, cause of action nuisance, occurring on the same property, property transfer. But nuisance fundamentally involves a neighbor plaintiff. The use of one parcel of land affecting the rights of another parcel of land. We can't have this situation here. What we've got is a claim brought nuisance against the person who sold the property, several property owners. There's no use going on by Jackson Road Company signed as the plaintiffs are attempting to bring this cause of action. So I think that would be a bit of a stretch to apply nuisance law. It's difficult to use this event to define castles. I think one clear principle is that it cannot occur on the very land transfer. Therefore, I urge that the Court of Appeals be reversed both on the station issue and the nuisance issue.
Thank you, Mr. Norman. Ms. Small.
Thank you, Mr. Court. My name is Janet Small. I'm here representing Dr. Peter in this matter. Your Honors, based upon the position articulated by Jackson and Company in this case, the Harrises were barred from pursuing a remedy against Jackson Road Company the minute they became the property owners of this particular personal property. There's no question in this case that the Harrises did not know about the standing water problem, and that really they did everything they could when they did become aware of the problem to investigate it and determine what the cause of the problem was.
So your scenario, somebody could own a piece of property for 20 years, know about the problem, do nothing about it, sell to a new owner, not disclose, and the new owner would have a positive action against the original developer, even though it's 20 or 30 years later?
Your Honor, yes, that's true, and I believe that the policy of ensuring that the vendor, the developer, properly develop the property outweighs any consideration that there may be a delay in the pursuance of the action, which, as Justice Douglas pointed out, is a lot of consideration in the statute of repose case. Now, I've been before the court a couple of times arguing statute of limitations issues, and this court, as it's composed now, has been very consistent in saying that discovery of the injury is when the statute of limitations accrue. And the basis of that, and for instance, medical malpractice cases, was Article 1, Section 16 of the Ohio Constitution. If you review that section, which I'm sure you will, that does not just apply to bodily injury cases. It clearly says courts should be open to every person.
Well,
for injury
isn't it as if the court is closed to your clients? They have cause of action against the previous owners of the property.
Your Honor, that is true, but I think that's a dangerous type of reasoning to use for saying that they can't pursue this particular cause of action.
Well, was it the Liptons that they purchased the property from?
Correct.
The Liptons had a cause of action against the Jackson Road Company.
I don't agree with that, Your Honor.
Okay, explain to me why you don't.
Okay. If you review the portion of the deposition testimony that has been documented to the court, Elaine Lipson testified, well, yeah, we knew that there was standing water, but that was the natural condition of the property, which is the same thing that Jackson Road has held from the beginning. You know, we couldn't have done anything about this. This is the natural accumulation of property. The Lipsons had every right to assume, oh, yeah, that's the natural condition of the property. The Lipsons also were very different than my clients in the type of homeowners that they were. The Lipsons were a middle-aged couple, had no children. The Harrises came in and bought the property. They had six young children. They bought the premises with the idea they wanted to use the backyard where the kids could play ball.
Well, but the jury found against the Listons, did it not?
Yes, but the trial court found against the Harrises. The trial court said...
The appeal was settled, so the Listons have been had to pay, it was a fairly substantial jury.
Yes, but, Your Honor, there's a whole other part of this case. There was structural injury to the home itself, and Jackson or company was not involved in that part of the case. So this is one part of the case.
So the recovery was not just for the ponding of the water?
In fact, I can tell you that the release does not compensate the Harrisons entirely for the standing water problem. It was not until the Harrisons moved into this property and realized they had a problem that was substantial injury to them personally, and they retained a landscaping engineer and determined, oh, the problem goes way back to Jackson Roof Company when they developed this property insufficiently. They installed insufficient storm sewers, they provided for stormwater runoff insufficiently.
But if the Listons had disclosed, the jury obviously doesn't hey, we have a problem with constant standing water in the backyard. Then the buyer would have gone, you got a buyer beware, buyer on notice, you could have gotten all your experts in, look at it, determine, hey, this property has water problems, I'm not going to buy it. I'm just not going to buy it. The rent I can pay for nothing, I'm not going to buy it. So the cause of action is that the Listons are not disclosing, allowing them to make that choice.
Your Honor, that does not accuse Jackson or company for being tortfeasor.
Well, but the statute of limitations that end up ending things, whether it's disputing or not, it puts a finality for somebody to move on with their life. Under your condition, you could have 20 more owners, and the 25th owner has the right to choose.
Absolutely, Your Honor. But I believe the Ohio Constitution provides that they are allowed to do that. And so the court in the statute of repose cases has been before and said that where arbitrarily cut off a date, that is unconstitutional to deprive the claimant of the reaction.
I'm trying to understand something that you said earlier. Your position is that this is not a case in which there was discovery by the Department of
State.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
That this discovery of the cause of action did not occur until the client on the property. So your analogy would be to taking it over to the human side.
How do they come against the prior owners?
Who had a serious medical problem.
They didn't know.
But they didn't know that the cause of
the suit at the same time. Yes, at the same time, after she says that Listons didn't know about the problem when they sold the property, how did then the Harrises collect $4,000 or $5,000 from the Listons when they sued them?
Because they didn't know about the property. They just think that it was, they thought it was a natural problem.
Yeah. They knew about the problem. The jury said it's bullshit.
Yeah, sure. But you should go on over Jackson.
Wrote that the cause of action did not accrue until they discovered that the defendant had caused the death, that there was no proof that the defendant had caused the death. There was no proof here.
Isn't the standard we've developed in those cases a no or should have known? Isn't that basically the standard?
Yes.
And so the rub here really becomes the farm owners know the water is there. Know that there's problem standing water, and so it becomes a question of whether they should have knew or should have known when they observed the only problem that the developer was the cause, rather than the natural way of the land.
Your Honor, I think that's only say that the Harrison cause of action is contingent on what the Listons did And I'm not arguing that. I am arguing government adherence to the accrual plan, regardless of what you did. But what I'm saying is...
Okay, well, I guess the reason I'm questioning you is the way I'm looking at it, it does depend. I think that's true.
Your Honor, I would point you to the original motion for summary judgment in this case. The summary judgment issue was raised in one paragraph in the reply brief, and the basis for it at that point in time was that the Jackson Rose's involvement with the land had ended 4 years previously. That's clearly not standard. The issue as to the Liftons and whether or not the statute of limitations would have run against them was never brief to the trial court, so
we don't have much help.
Right, exactly, on that particular point. But I would argue that based upon...
Could you answer me one more thing?
Summary judgment.
There's a
summary judgment for the building of the
people. Did you find it in the frame? There's water stand for concrete design. Can you not even maintain the lawn there? What's out there?
It interferes with the ability to use the lawn.
It will freeze
over in the wintertime, which is why the person
Well, I think I'd like to hear your response to the argument that the damage here is to the... This is not injury to an individual, as we think in all our discovery cases have been, well, not all, but most have been. They were first started with the discovery that something's wrong with one's body and how much time does one have to sue a doctor, hospital, or whatever. This is different. I mean, this is damage to land, and the fact that two previous owners, I guess it was Fisher and Liston, apparently didn't sue for it, sort of, to me, because of my philosophy, I guess, corroborates this idea that there ought to be a cutoff time with damage to land, that where there are several owners, and now it's Justice Stratton's 15, 20 years later, somebody comes out that, well, they don't like this ponding in their backyard, and so they sue the original contractor. If the purpose of the law is to compensate people for injury to them, and assume that your clients here are injured, their remedy really isn't satisfied, is it not? Okay, because of lack of funds from the Listons, or for some other reason?
Well, I know that Your Honor, the remnant statute repose case, your defense was premised on the fact that there were other remedies along that Stillman had in that case. I don't think that you can assume that those remedies are going to be out there. For instance, the builder in this particular case was bankrupt. The builder was party to the case, but there could be no remedy against the builder to the extent that he could reduce the problem, the
water problem. Well, but do we determine remedies based upon how much, what the assets are of prospective defendants? In our analysis, don't we look at legal entities, determine whether somebody has an action against another legal individual or some other legal entity from which there could be recovery? I mean, we can't base it on, too, if you want to base the law on whether somebody may be able to pay a judgment, do we?
Well, I agree with you on that. I think that, and I believe the statute of proof cases say that the Ohio Constitution guarantees you the right of remedy against the tortfeasor. And in this particular case, the tortfeasor was Jackson Road Company, one of many tortfeasors, I might add. And I'd also like to point out that it's, I think it's particularly, it's very dangerous to say owners of the remedy against the party, because there is, as you're aware, a new joint federal liability statute, and depending on the jury findings, you may not receive full recovery from a particular tortfeasor if you have a non-party that's also found to be at fault.
Well, but here the remedy is pretty traditional, isn't it? I mean, somebody buys a piece of property from someone else, and there's either a latent or a patent defect. If it's latent, and it's not obvious to the buyer, the seller obviously has an obligation to reveal that. If it's patent, if it's obvious, then we don't have a problem, I guess, because the statute begins to run for the new buyer. What's wrong with that in terms of remedies?
I think that a remedy is consistent with all the case laws in court about the injury. And the Ohio Constitution guarantees a person the right to pursue a claim based upon land. There is no differentiation in that particular constitutional section between bodily injury or injury to land. And in order for this case to be consistent with all the previous cases out of the court since the early 1980s, it has to be discovery. When the Harris did absolutely nothing wrong here, they did not delay. They bought the property, found there was a problem, immediately investigated it, and determined that the primary cause of the standing water problem was Jackson Rose Company's negligence in developing this property. They, under the case law and the Ohio constitutional section, are entitled to pursue an action against Jackson Rose Company, and to do so would be violative of their constitutional rights and also completely at odds with the case law, according to me, the Collins case being the most recent, where I think the court is even starting to go in the direction of saying it's not just discovery of the injury, it's also discovery that the defendant is involved in that injury or is a cause of that injury.
You have used your time.
Okay, just briefly, I will also say that there's nothing wrong in this particular case with holding these developers liable when they're negligent, even if it is a long time in the future. I mean, this court, I'm sure, the new statute of repose will be before it at some point, and you will be called upon again to decide that issue. But there is a public policy reason for holding developers responsible for negligence in developing their property. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Norman, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Your Honor, there's still no justification for having a cause of action spring to light after it's expired. That has not been addressed by the plaintiffs in this case. The Harrises argue that they've been barred from suits, and somehow the courthouse doors are closed to them. That is not the case. They have a cause of action. In fact, they're sued upon that cause of action against the listeners. They didn't feel that they got they paid from the listeners. They sued the listeners. They are not barred from a remedy, and the application that the defendant, Jackson Road Corporation, is urging here is simply to apply statute of limitations that is already run. Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. Council may leave. We have an admission ceremony. You're welcome to stay if you'd like, but